It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about federal legislation to support seed and animal breeding research tailored to different regions of the country that could boost seed hardiness and farmer yields. Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin introduced the Seeds and Breeds for the Future Act earlier this summer. As we explore plant and animal breeding, call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Anthony Ponke is vice president of the Wisconsin-based advocacy group Family Farm Defenders and worked on the Fond du Lac area farm his family still owns. Anthony, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. So Senator Baldwin's legislation would set aside $75 million for research directed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the research would aim to develop these new seed varieties at public research universities. Why is more funding needed for seed research?
Well, I think one thing is over the years, maybe the last couple decades, really, we've seen public institutions and so on, these are land grant institutions kind of becoming more and more, well, serving more and more corporations, private interests, and so on. And this legislation sets aside money that that public institutions can actually, at least in part, like fulfill their mission, producing seeds that working with the community also. It's like, it's not just dedicating resources for research, which is key, but also cultivating relationships with people in the community, farmers, can be businesses as well, to help diversify our food system. So that's key.
What are the concerns with the currently available seed varieties?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One thing is this lack of genetic diversity. In terms of, and then resilience is something, especially with climate change and drought and all these other things, extreme weather and so on, that more and more when the genetic variety of our seeds is, well, diminished, they're going more homogenous around the country or even around the world. Like, and we have different weather patterns, different needs in different regions. Like, we need to have that kind of diversity. And it's also just like, not just with the diversity question, there's also prices. I think, most folks at the grocery store see, inflation impacting, food, your prices, what you're paying at the store and so on. And while you don't maybe see what farmers are doing, like what they're paying for seeds has been going up as well the last couple of decades. And so like they passed that cost off onto the consumer then, which we see at the grocery store. And so this is an issue that promoting research helps us environmentally, it also helps farmers with their bottom line in terms of promoting competition. Something like, I think you look around the country, you look around the world too, like when we talk about genetic diversity, we're talking about like also you can say like corporate control, homogenization, where fewer and fewer companies are controlling the seed markets. And then you have all these issues with price fixing, collusion, stuff like that. And so this is also, this is federal legislation, could be part of the farm bill, could be standalone legislation. And President Biden had launched a task force earlier in the year to investigate more what can be done about seeds and inputs in general. So there's a complicated web here with all this, just, one part.
One piece of that web, I want to go back to climate change, because we see the heat waves, the droughts, these extreme storms that are really stressing the fields, stressing plants that we depend on for our food system. Can we adapt our seeds and breeds enough to keep up with climate change?
That's the hope. I think in terms of like adapting and for the varieties and the regions and not just seeds and animal breeds and livestock, like I think, we have to be flexible. We have to take in consideration the knowledge that we have now, the ancestral knowledge too, I talk about, in the article I wrote, but also, just like we're talking about generations in the past, there's communities, indigenous communities also that, have seed banks who've collected seeds, seeds that have, grown into plants that have survived, that have adapted for generations. Like working with that knowledge is going to be key as we deal with climate change. And this legislation brings together the key stakeholders in our communities who have that knowledge, who've retained it, and that can work together into creating varieties. I mean, with climate change, we see like temperatures changing. We see like the extreme weather events. We also just see like these gradual temperature changes, right, in different regions where, you know, we see that, I think farmers see that particularly where your falls are getting wetter, your springs are getting shorter. And so we're going to need to work together in terms of finding things like that can grow in those kinds of environments. And so, I mean, will we do that? Well, we have to. So that's kind of like what this legislation, I think, is going to be key in terms of like getting us together to figuring these problems out.
I want to acknowledge what you said there about indigenous foodways and you know, just imagining through the history of agriculture, you know, thousands of years growing season after growing season, and farmers and people tending the land, gradually modifying their crops by saving and planting the seeds of the plants that produce like the best fruit and you know, the most productive yields. Can you speak to this natural evolution of optimizing crops versus what happens today in the lab?
Mm-hmm. Well, personally, I don't have like, you know, in terms of like a story or I can't speak to it necessarily personally. I know like for our organization, Family Farm Defenders, we have every year we have a John Kinsman Prize, our founder, one of the people who created the organization, John Kinsman. It's the John Kinsman Food Sovereignty Prize. And one year, a few years ago, there was a farmer out in Minnesota who had, I believe, was approached by Winona LaDuke from White Earth Reservation in northern Minnesota. And they had found some seeds, some corn seeds there that were buried, that they had found somewhere in the reservation. And they approached a farmer who had this great land and never used chemicals and everything. And they had found these very old seeds, and then they asked him to plant them and see what happens. And this person did that. And they grew into this like form of corn that has just like, and it had been tested. I'm not sure, but with University of Minnesota or Wisconsin, but the corn had been tested. It grew real like way bigger than any other corn we typically have, but it also had all these different kinds of nutrients and so on. And, you know, those seeds were from we don't know how long ago. Those seeds were not bought in a store. I mean, those seeds and grew into incredible plants. And in part, and those plants, that corn, that crop that grew from those seeds, I believe they've been working with it since then. But that was stuff that had right there. You could see like the wealth of in the plant, but in the historical knowledge that had been maintained by people over generations and in cultivating those seeds, cultivating those plants, keeping that alive. And in the laboratory, you're going to have companies that, you know, especially with genetically modified organisms and so on, that are working on also this question of dealing with climate, you know, droughts and all that, making drought resistant varieties and so on. People have been doing that for a while, but then you have the companies doing this, and those varieties are patented restricts, you know, and they're called like utility patents. And that's something that this legislation, the seeds that would be developed under this legislation can't be patented in that kind of way. And when you have that kind of concentration, then you have, you know, issues in terms of access and so on.
Well, thank you for sharing that story from Minnesota. Anthony Ponke with us, vice president of the group Family Farm Defenders, a mission to create a farmer-controlled and consumer-oriented food system. Join the conversation about seed diversity in food crops. Call in with a question. Share a comment. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Seed biodiversity may help make food systems more resilient to climate change. A bill in Congress called the Seeds and Breeds for the Future Act. It would promote the development of new seed varieties and animal breeds tailored to regions of the country and bred for environmental resilience. Be part of this discussion along the way. Call in with a question, bring a concern, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have Anthony Ponke, who is with the Wisconsin grassroots group Family Farm Defenders and an associate professor of international relations at San Francisco State University. Let's take a call now. Jeff in Delafield is here. Jeff, hi. What would you like to ask?
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if this program will address the will explicitly address the overuse of fertilizers on crop fields. We have a very serious problem in central Wisconsin with groundwater contamination due to overuse of fertilizers. Lots of residential wells with unsafe drinking water due to nitrates, and what were once crystal clear trout streams are increasingly being choked with weeds and algae, and lakes becoming polluted due to nitrates coming in through the spring water. And this all seems to have corresponded with our increased reliance on biofuels due to all the fertilizer that's required to grow corn. So will this program address the issue of excessive fertilizer use?
Jeff, thank you for that question. Yes, Anthony.
No, it's a great question, and definitely, I hear you in terms of the concern and everything you mentioned there. The legislation doesn't have anything to do with, I mean, directly, there's nothing in there about fertilizer use. I mean, I can imagine, I mean, the idea would be, hopefully, that when, in terms, like, so the concern that you raised, like, the idea would be, with the, as this legislation is not just about putting money into ag, into seed production. That's key. That's part of it. There's $75 million. That's part of, could be in the research title in the farm bill, but the legislation is also meant to bring people together. You know, that's, you know, kind of like democratize the food system in a certain way. So like the idea would be, you have the concern about fertilizers. You live in a certain area of the country. You could connect with, whether it's with farmers, with extension agents, make your voice heard, and then people can work together on creating seeds that may not require the kind of fertilizers or the amount that that are being currently used. And so like that's where part of the legislation is key in that regard, in that it is money, but it's also about getting people involved, right? That's the public mission. That's, you know, we have land grant institutions, public institutions. That means they work with the public, you know, they're not top down. They should be, you know, it's a mutually beneficial relationship. So like there's a chance that this legislation could impact that by getting people involved in developing seed technology together.
Jeff had mentioned corn, and the state agriculture department says Wisconsin is among, you know, the nation's top exporter of ginseng roots, cranberries, and sweet corn. And we're producing millions of pounds of snap beans and carrots, green peas. Which crops are most in need of greater genetic diversity?
Well, that's a great question. Corn is up there. So if you look at corn, wheat, a lot of these varieties, there's a lot of, so yeah, there's a lot of production. But then I think you have to think of, I think what Jeff mentioned too, like the inputs that go into that production. We can see, you know, sales and the earnings, but then, you know, what are the real costs of food production? What's the real cost of the corn that we're producing? In terms of the environmental, I mean, and we say, and it's, I don't know if we want to frame it exactly in terms of cost, but like the, you know, the challenges that growing food the way that we do, what goes into it, we have to rethink that. And so corn, there's, you know, ever fewer varieties of corn that we have that are available in terms of seeds, in terms of what people buy too, in terms of sweet corn and so on. But, you know, like, particularly with field corn, which goes into feed and so on, and that is exported, you know, the varieties of that, I mean, so much is dominated by, or is GM crops at this point.
Genetically
modified.
I mean,
would not, you're right. We could see more diversity in terms of that for sure.
I was going to jump in here as we talk about efforts to expand research of plant and animal breeding. Anthony Ponke with us, vice president of the Wisconsin-based group Family Farm Defenders, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jane in Suamico now. Jane, hi.
I'm so glad you have this guest on, and the work they're doing is incredibly important. I wonder if he could speak to the stranglehold huge corporations have on seeds and the fact that they patent the seeds and then prevent farmers from keeping seeds from one year to the next to regrow their next crops.
Jane, thank you so much for that question. And you've written about this, Anthony, saying, you know, four firms now control more than two-thirds of commercial seed and pesticide sales. How is consolidation in the seed industry affecting farmers and people who eat, consumers?
Right. Yes. Thanks, Jane. Thank you for the comment. I think, well, you have these well-known cases like this farmer in Canada who, I mean, there's a lot of stories, really, but, you know, this question of, there's a lot of ways that we can talk about consolidation and the problems that it poses. Like, one thing, yeah, that when four firms, like I mentioned, oh, the farmer in Canada, you have this case of a person who, I believe at the time was Monsanto. Monsanto is not, you know, is now purchased from Bayer, the pharmaceutical company. Right there, you can see that there's this connection with chemical companies, pharmaceuticals, and seed and agriculture. But Monsanto at the time, I believe, was doing some investigations, found some plants growing on this person's farm, some crops, and that, you know, probably perhaps for drift or something, like the seeds, plants had gotten to this guy's property, and then they ended up suing him for basically stealing. There's movies made about it and so on. The person didn't steal anything. It's that, you know, the way that plants, you know, the way that seeds move in the air and so on. That's how nature works. And so there's a way that patents and then the patenting of seeds, the genetically modified seeds, like
makes
that,
it illegal for farmers to save and replant genetically engineered seeds.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yep. And then when they, in terms of consolidation, also in terms of, like I mentioned, with price and so on, we see, like, you can see, like, when four firms control an industry, there's a research that came out of the University of Missouri, Columbia, I believe, Mary Hendrickson and a group of people who worked there, they found that, and their research is all over the internet, you can find it and search articles and whatever, but they find that when four firms control over 40% of a certain industry, then we start seeing, like, essentially illegal practices emerge it can be anything, pork, but seeds included. Then you see price fixing, or you even see, like, price leading. Basically, you know, like, maybe firms don't, you know, we're not talking about a boardroom. People get together, they have a phone call. Like, what are you charging? Not necessarily that. What they're doing, though, is, like, they notice because the markets are so thin.
Yes, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us. And we appreciate you explaining. Anthony Ponke, Vice President of the Wisconsin-based organization Family Farm Defenders. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.